Stalin decided to reopen and expand the Kirov case that had subsided with the shooting of Nikolaev and sentencing of Zinoviev and Kamenev in early 1935. Now the two old Bolsheviks were re-interrogated, and the net of arrests was spread wider. Then a former associate of Trotsky's, named Valentin Olberg, was arrested. His interrogation established that Trotsky was also involved in the murder of Kirov. More arrests followed. In the spring of 1936, the arrests of old Trotskyites spread further, and those already in camps were re-sentenced. Those convicted of terror offences were to be shot. But the real work was the creation of a new sort of political show, the first of Stalin's great trials. Yezhov acted as supervisor, but it exhausted him. Soon he was so debilitated that Kaganovich suggested, and Stalin approved, that he be sent on special holiday for 2 months. The chief defendants were to be Zinoviev and Kamenev. Their old friends were arrested to help persuade them to perform. The NKVD interrogators were to devote themselves body and soul to achieving the confessions. As Stalin's instructions to the NKVD said, "Mount your prisoner and do not dismount until they have confessed." Yezhov rigged the trial, promising the witnesses their lives in return for testifying against Zinoviev and Kamenev. Even though they were not physically tortured, the regime of threats and sleeplessness demoralized them both. The heating was turned up in their cells in midsummer. Yezhov threatened that Kamenev's son would be shot. Finally, in July, Zinoviev asked to be able to talk to Kamenev on his own. Then they demanded to speak to the Politburo. If the party would guarantee there would be no executions, they would confess. Yagoda accompanied these two broken men on the short drive from the Lubyanka to the Kremlin, where they had both once lived. When they arrived in the room where Kamenev had chaired so many Politburo meetings, they discovered that only Stalin, Voroshilov, and Yezhov were present. Where was the rest of the Politburo? Stalin replied that he and Voroshilov were a commission of the Politburo. Kamenev begged for a guarantee of their lives. "A guarantee?" replied Stalin. "What guarantee can there be? It's simply ridiculous. Maybe you want an official treaty certified by the League of Nations. Zinoviev and Kamenev forget they're not in a marketplace haggling over a stolen horse, but at the Politburo of the Bolshevik Communist Party. If an assurance by the Politburo is not enough, I don't see any point in talking further. Zinoviev and Kamenev behave as if they're in a position to make conditions to the Politburo," exclaimed Voroshilov. "If they had any common sense, they'd fall to their knees before Stalin." Stalin reassured them. "The comrades forget that we are Bolsheviks, disciples and followers of Lenin, and we don't want to shed the blood of old Bolsheviks, no matter how grave their past sins." Zinoviev and Kamenev wearily agreed to plead guilty, provided there were no shootings and their families were protected. "That goes without saying." Stalin finished the meeting. Stalin set to work on the script for the Zinoviev trial, even dictating the words of the new Procurator General, Andrei Vyshinsky. Stalin issued a secret circular which announced that a terrorist leviathan named the United Trotskyite Zinovievite Center had attempted to assassinate Stalin, Voroshilov, Kaganovich, Kirov, Sergo, Zhdanov, and others. These lists of purported targets became a bizarre honor, since inclusion signified proximity to Stalin. One can imagine the leaders checking the list like schoolboys, rushing to the notice board to make sure they are in the football team. The first of the famous show trials opened on the 19th of August 1936 in the House of Unions. The 350 spectators were mainly NKVD clerks in plain clothes, foreign journalists, and diplomats. On a raised dais in the center, the three judges, led by Ulrich, sat on portentous throne-like chairs covered in red cloth. The real star of this theatrical show, the Procurator General Andrei Vyshinsky, whose performance of foaming ire and articulate pedantry would make him a European figure, sat to the audience's left. The defendants, 16 shabby husks, guarded by NKVD troopers with fixed bayonets, sat to the right. Behind them was a door that led to the suite where Yagoda could confer with Vyshinsky and the defendants during the trial. Stalin was said to be lurking in a recessed gallery at the back, whence puffs of pipe smoke were alleged to be emanating. In fact, he had left for Sochi. It is a mark of the impenetrable secrecy of the Soviet system that it has taken 70 years for anyone to discover that Stalin was actually far away, though he followed the legal melodrama almost as closely as if he had been listening to it in his office. 87 NKVD packages of interrogations, plus records of confrontations, arrived at the wicker table on the veranda. Kaganovich and Yezhov checked every detail with Stalin. The protégé was now more powerful than his former patron. Yezhov signed his name ahead of Kaganovich in every telegram. The accused were indicted with a fantastical array of often bungled crimes ordered by the alleged conspiracy, led by Trotsky, Zinoviev, and Kamenev, that had successfully killed Kirov but repeatedly failed to kill Stalin and the others. For 6 days, they confessed to these crimes with a docility that amazed Western spectators. The language of these trials was as obscure as hieroglyphics and could only be understood in the context of the closed Bolshevik universe of conspiracies of evil against good, in which terrorism simply signified any doubt about the policies or character of Stalin. All his political opponents were, per se, assassins. More than two terrorists was a conspiracy, and putting together such killers from different factions created a unified center of astonishing global reach that reveals much about Bolshevik paranoia and Stalin's internal melodrama formed by decades of underground life. While these crushed men delivered their lines, Procurator General Vyshinsky brilliantly combined the indignant humbug of a Victorian preacher and the diabolical curses of a witch doctor. Born into an affluent, noble Polish family in Odessa, he had once occupied a cell with Stalin, with whom he shared hampers from his parents, an investment that may have saved his life. Alert, vigorous, vain, and intelligent, he impressed Westerners as much as he chilled them with his forensic mannerisms and vicious wit. It was he who later described the Romanians as not a nation, but a profession. He was very proud of his notoriety. Presented to Princess Margaret in London in 1947, he whispered to the diplomat introducing them, "Please add my former title as procurator in the famous Moscow trials." Every day, Yezhov and Kaganovich reveled in reporting to Stalin, the actor, manager, playwright, the successful unfolding of this theatrical piece. However, there were severe doubts among many of the journalists, exacerbated by the NKVD's comical blunders. The court heard how Trotsky's son, Sidov, ordered the assassinations in a meeting at the Hotel Bristol in Denmark, yet it emerged that the hotel had been demolished in 1917. "What the devil did you need the hotel for?" Stalin is said to have shouted. "You ought to have said railway station. The station is always there." Stalin's spin doctors engineered public outrage against the terrorists. Pravda shrieked, "Crush the loathsome creatures! The mad dogs must be shot!" In court, Vyshinsky summed up, "These mad dogs of capitalism tried to tear limb from limb the best of our Soviet land. I demand that these mad dogs should be shot, every one of them." The dogs themselves now made their pathetic pleas and confessions. Even now they are tragic to read. Kamenev finished his confession but then rose again, obviously off message, to plead for his children, whom he had no other means of addressing. "No matter what my sentence will be, I in advance consider it just. Don't look back," he told his sons. "Go forward. Follow Stalin." The judges withdrew to consider their pre-decided verdict, returning at 2:30 to sentence all to death, at which one defendant shouted,
Long live the cause of Marx, Engels, Lenin, and Stalin!
Back in prison, the scared terrorists shakily appealed for mercy, remembering Stalin's promise to spare them. As Zinoviev and Kamenev waited in their cells, Stalin, waiting in sunny Sochi, received a telegram at 8:48 p.m., informing him that the appeal of the defendants had been received. The Politburo proposed to reject the demands and execute the verdict tonight. Stalin did not answer immediately, surely aware that the murder of two of Lenin's closest comrades marked a giant step towards his next colossal gamble, an intense reign of terror against the party itself, a slaughter that would consume even his own friends and family. He waited 3 long hours before sending the laconic telegram, "Okay."